Yes, that's right.
Oh, yeah, let's take the, just as an arbitrary figure, to, they felt, Michigan and New York both felt, if you had more than 10, it puts you in a commercial category. That was the whole reason.
I would move to delete from section 1 any number not exceeding 10, and letting the quantum of evidence otherwise available be there, if it's there or if it isn't.
If he's carrying 100 and he can convince the jury that they're all his bets. And
fine.
Okay.
Second. Question.
All righty. All those in favor of Mr. O'Dell's motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those
aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried.
Move to adopt section 6.
As amended.
As amended.
Any other comment?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk call the roll.
Senator Jurisdiction?
Aye.
Representative Paz?
Aye.
Mr. Dow?
Aye.
Aye.
Pass. Section 7.
All right. Possession of a gambling device. Person commits a crime of possession of a gambling device if, with knowledge of the character thereof, he manufactures, sells, transports, places, or possesses, or conducts, or negotiates a transaction affecting or designed to affect ownership, custody, or use of 1, a slot machine, or 2, any other gambling device, believing that the device is to be used in the advancement of unlawful gambling activity. Under sub 1, obviously, it's just malum prohibitum. You just can't have a slot machine. And then under 2, you'd have to show other, you'd have to show further knowledge on his part, because it could involve so many different kinds of items that there may be a innocent possession of it.
There's one experience that we had in Multnomah County that disturbed me. A fellow had an old antique type slot machine, tantamount to a slot machine, which he kept in his party room for the purposes of that we would keep an antique chest, but it was a gambling device. Some police officer was somehow or another invited through there one evening, reported the same device. The thing was confiscated and destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this was a situation where the district attorney was under mandatory duty.
That's coming up.
And it broke, even the prosecutor involved just hated it, and everyone else did. But I don't know that we can make an exception for those things or not without creating a loophole.
Well, of course, this is, I always like, you know, the pinball machine. We had a friend that I grew up in school with. He had a one-armed bandit and had the key to the money drawer. So we'd always used his nickels because we never had a nickel. And we'd, by the hour, pump that baby and then take the key and get our money back, or his money, because it was his nickel, and run him back through again. That was quite an entertainment. But that, of course, even then was illegal.
All right. Per se.
Well, I don't know.
I think those are unfortunate things.
The only thing we might try to do would be to try to write in an affirmative defense of some kind. Similar city of firearms, where you exempt antique firearms and that sort of thing. You know, that kind of a statute.
Possibility.
There is a way, and I don't know, I can kind of find it in a minute. Now, 166.460 under firearms, all the statutes applying to concealed weapons does not apply to antique pistols or revolvers incapable of use as such. Now, of course, with a slot machine, the way we've defined slot machine is really, we've included the kind of machine that's inoperative at the time.
I know that.
We still say that you can't have it, but maybe we could write a section on a defense, an affirmative defense, that it is an antique or novelty or something like that, and used for use in his own personal use.
His own casino.
Well, I think it's kind of rare. I have an example each, but you know that we could extend the same thing to your rare marijuana plant. I just have conversation peach, officer, and that if we're really going to crack down on it, we better just say you don't keep them things.
I tend to agree.
It's unfortunate, but
the problem here is that if there had been prosecutorial discretion, nothing would have happened.
Well, I think we're coming
up
to 13.
Langley. There was no choice.
Yeah.
And that was the sad part. The prosecutor would not have issued in that case and would not have confiscated and destroyed that machine had he had the discretion. He didn't have it.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing I could suggest.
Well, somebody want to move the passage of Section 7 or the amendment? Or
so move.
All right, move the passage. Any further comment? All right. Clerk will call the roll. Kate, aye. Favor, nay. Opposed.
Senator Dernstadt?
Aye.
Representative Hall?
Aye.
Mr. O'Dell?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Clerk passed. Gambling offenses, prima facie proof.
All right. All this just says that the published report in a newspaper, magazine, or other periodically printed publication of general circulation, or evidence that a description of some aspect of a sporting event, printed or otherwise, noted at the place in which a violation of this article is alleged to have been committed. These are prima facie evidence to prove that the event did occur. That's all.
Why is that?
The evidence.
Why do we need them?
Why do we, not a little.
Well, it's make it easier for the DA to prove his case.
That's a very.
Yeah, I mean,
putting it on.
Well, it avoids a lot of unnecessary rigmarole, putting witnesses on to say, yes, there was a horse race at such and such times in such a place, or a football game.
Having been exposed to the legal profession of late, I recommend that we adopt Section 8.
I'd like to tell you, you're prosecuted under it, Senator. This doesn't establish prima facie evidence of guilt or anything like that. It's just
but the event happened.
Occurrence of the event, so.
I don't see.
I'm just trying to put myself in the position of a prosecutor. What would I have to show in the bookmaking out the
show the sports page, so and so at Portland Meadows. One.
How would I be able to prove that otherwise by calling a sports writer who's there?
Calling an official of the Portland Meadows.
Calling an official of Portland Meadows. It just cuts a witness out of my
head. Yeah, say
right.
The witness.
Right.
I'd be able to prove it anyway.
Of course, you'd have to have somebody establish the.
No window dress.
Publish report, daily newspaper.
I'd have to call.
Well, I'm particularly saying now, if you've got a. If you, and you could run into this situation. You've got a charge brought against a guy for promoting gambling that involves, say, the Rose Bowl. Something like that, an out-of-state event.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I'd have to bring someone from Pasadena.
What's number two? Evidence that a description of some aspect of the event was written, printed, or otherwise. What's contemplated there? In other words, I can comprehend the published report under number one. But now you don't have that for some reason or another, so you want to introduce evidence that a description of some aspect of the event was written, printed, otherwise noted at the place. Posted on the board, is that you?
How about a circular?
Yeah.
Any of the race results posted on the blackboard, or is that what they're going to
do? Yeah, that kind of thing. That might not necessarily involve a newspaper or publication of general circulation.
Because it might be a bullfight in Madrid, Spain, and it may not be published in a newspaper of general circulation.
Right.
at least in English.
Who's betting on the bulls these days?
Chicago or otherwise.
Yeah. Did you see that thing?
I see nothing wrong with it.
Night?
It's innocuous.
Oh. I didn't see it in color.
I move the adoption of Section 8 as it is.
Okay, any further comment? All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Dernstadt?
Aye.
Representative Hawes?
Aye.
Mr. O'Dell?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Reluctantly, aye.
You mean on Channel 10?
No, it was on 60 Minutes, that 60-minute program on CBS.
Oh, it's terrible.
They had a segment on there about 20 minutes about bullfighting.
Channel 10 had one a few months ago, and it was on, what's his name, Cordoblas, or the famous one. And boy, it was something. He got showed him getting knocked down, trampled, I guess, 50 times. Gored about 10 different times.
Yeah, well, and you know these poor horses that these guys
have.
Yeah.
They really take.
Oh, that's
a forfeiture of prizes.
All right, this is just a present law, is really all it amounts to, forfeiture of prizes. I see I've got an oversight here. I should have cited you the section that this continues, and I didn't. I can tell you that real quickly, though, because I've got them all set out here.
From 10 or 12. On page 12, evidence of reputation, no. 465, yeah, here it is. Any person maintains or assists in maintaining a place used for gambling or lottery is guilty of maintaining a common nuisance. That's 465. 10-20 is commencement of proceedings. 030 is application for temporary injunction. 040 is service of the order. 050 is final decree. 060 is owner's appearance. 070 is evidence of reputation admissible.
Yeah, I was looking for the one that provides for the forfeiture now.
Give it up.
Sorry.
That's telling we do have that.
Well, it's 167-430 forfeiture of prizes.
430?
Yeah.
That's present law? Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, is it similar to what we got here in 9?
Yeah, that's what I've got. There's practically verbatim.
Has the state ever done this?
Yes.
Is that it?
And every other valuable thing drawn as a prize in any lottery or pretended lottery by any person within this state are forfeited to the use of the state and may be sued for and recovered by a civil action.
Northgate Hotel case. Well, it's been argued in the Supreme Court yet or not. We seized the gambling material, the alcohol dispensing material, the tables, the chairs, the bar, the back mirrors, the bottles, the glasses, and the wall-to-wall carpeting, and several beds and mattresses.
Were they a prize? Were they a prize?
Well, we went a tad bit too far, I think.
They're going to have a special sale on it.
Now, procedurally, how'd you operate under this statute?
This wasn't my case. Dick Grant handled it, who has subsequently resigned and is teaching school at the University of Oregon. As I understand it, they had the thing set up through undercover, and the activity was going on. And they seized it along with the ring. They just took all paraphernalia. Period. I mean everything. And
now they could have seized all the gambling devices and the money and the prizes.
The alcohol, without any trouble at all. But we got into fixtures and things of this sort. And they're claiming that they were foully handled, and I think, the court will decide it. We'll have some guidelines.
Well, do you think we need anything further in this section?
No, I think it's good as it is.
Okay, Mr. Odell Moses.
So move.
Any other comment? All right, those in favor indicate by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The clerk call the roll.
Senator Dunstan?
Aye.
Representative Hayes?
Aye.
Mr. Odell?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Recovery of gambling fines.
Same thing. That restates.
Got a misspelling, though.
Yeah, on the third line, that should be action at law instead of actor. Is there another one?
No, that's one. Of
yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly the same language. Now, I wondered about this. If you wanted to change it in any particular... wanted to continue to go into the county treasury. I wanted to go someplace else.
I'd rather see it go directly to a specific fund, which the liquor fund, as the liquor fund operates, for the continuing investigation and prosecution of this type of activity. Directly under the control of the, you come down here, with it can be under the control of the county sheriff or the district attorney.
Yeah, I agree with you philosophically, but one advantage of this is that it goes back into the county level as a school offset, so to speak. And
I'd worry about dividing it up and accountability and all this sort of stuff on if we had the sheriff or the district attorney, on city rates, if the city does the rating and prosecuted by the district attorney, does it go to county?
The state.
Does it go to the state?
The district attorney. I mean, I'm talking about how the liquor fund is presently applied. This could be applied in the same fashion, I think. But I have no serious objection to going to the county treasurer either.
Every time I've run into one of these kind of statutes, I've been reluctant to monkey with it too much because I've got visions of all the counties descending on us and whatnot. Although I don't think this amounts to a hill of beans, probably as far as the amount of money involved.
It's a principle.
Move the adoption of section 10.
Well, of course.
There's a motion before the House.
Why wouldn't it go like all other fines? Why did just in the general fund of the county or the district making the arrest?
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
I'm sure that someone along the line felt that, gee, what we ought to do with all that gambling money is make sure it goes to school kids.
Yeah, but speeding, you're probably right, but speeding money and assault money and drunk money and all that goes into general fund.
Remember, not necessarily drunk money. There's a division there in the general fund. Yeah.
Remember that to
that's the one
to divert talking. This, you might. No, you wouldn't, would you? Never mind.
I see we've got an inconsistency here we're going to have to resolve, too. And I suppose we're going to talk about these two sections together. Now, if you'll look on page 28, we've got a couple of pages that are transposed here in your draft. I think Maxine changed them in your books a little bit. Now, section 12, and this is, here again, this is the same language that's in the statute now. Now, this says, one half of any fine imposed, that's under 550.
I think I lost.
Page 28, we've got section 12.
Yeah, now that talks about fines presently for offenses under section 535. Now that's slot machine. You see, that's slot machine. Now 530, which is what I've restated under section 10, that's recovery of gambling fines, and that's under ORS 167-505, which is forbidden games. And that's witness failing to appear at a gambling trial. That's fights for a fine for someone not appearing. Now those fines there go to the school fund. But then I guess it's all right. Maybe we don't need both. I guess I noted this. That was it. I suppose we don't need both of those. We can consolidate those into one, I suspect, and not try to draw any distinction between slot machine fines and gambling fines.
I'd like to see it all go to the school fund.
I agree.
As long as we're not going to, as long as the district attorney can't get anything out of it, let's go to the school.
You see, one of the statutes now says, 167-530 says, shall it be paid to the county treasury and constitute part of the school fund. But 550 says it shall be paid to the treasury of the county wherein the conviction was secured for the benefit of the school fund. So, two ways of saying the same thing. But I didn't change the language in either place, so you could decide what you want to do with these.
We could amend 13 to read substantially the same as 10 and constitute a part of.
I suppose we could, we could take section 12 and move it all over and combine it with section 12.
You mean section 10?
10.
Section 13, we've got the changes. We keep referring to section 12.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, it should have read section 12 anyway, but. It doesn't matter. as long as we know what we're talking about.
Why don't we just con-
And of course, Section 12, my 12, which is 167,550, allows for the stool pigeon type payment too.
What a, Don? What is? How about subsection 2 of section? Your section 12. What if I my initial reaction is to move to amend 10 and to just forget about 13. But I wonder if we give up. What are we giving up in subsection 2 of?
Well, in the subsection 2,
justice courts have concurrent jurisdiction.
Yeah. Now I have referred to section 7 or 10 in applying that jurisdictional clause, and that refers to slot machines, slot machine type. So it's both. Section 7, possession of a gambling device. And Section 10, it's recovery of gambling fines.
What would be the effect if we didn't pass either 10 or your 12, which is our 13? Fines would be handled just as if there were a speeding ticket or assault. Battery or
yeah, just be handled like any other.
Why do we want to, other than the fact that we?
I think though we'd have some. I think that we'd have a little political infighting there. Not you? I don't know.
How many gambling fines have we recovered in the state this last year?
Yeah, I can't believe that it's. I know what you're saying, and I think that's right. But it seems to me that this now's the time maybe to. When the law had a moral aspect of it, they seemed to always put the common school fund to help sell the bill, get it to the people. Usury laws and other things, the money always went in the common school fund. And I don't know,
I don't care.
It seems to me that unless there's really lots of money going in, the common school fund won't be heard to complain.
Well, your recovery under this section, unless we have extensive increased gambling as a result of our previous...
We may be out of big business here.
It's not going to amount to that much, but perhaps it will.
Unless Dick Grant gets back in the prosecution.
can't blame that on Dick. He was assigned the case.
Yeah, Dick had a good thing going for him.
If he ever quits the hotel business.
Well, Don, would you be upset if somebody moved that we delete both 10 and your 12 or 13?
Not a bit. I just put them here so you could be aware of their existence, and I just didn't want to, out of hand, take them out of the, without having you look at them.
Well, if we do that, will the county get the money?
Handle as an ordinary fine.
Well, I think
now that may depend upon where it's going.
Where do the rest of the fines go?
Municipal court fine in Portland goes to the city of Portland.
Yeah.
The municipal court,
of course, see that
fine in the city of Portland rested under a state ticket goes 50-50. I mean, a district court fine charging the same charge in the state of Oregon district court, it goes to the state or the county. I'm not sure what you think. There's a...
I don't think the state gets any of it.
I think it all goes to the county.
To the county, but in any event, there's a big...
Yeah, we're trying to resolve that by a bill that I've introduced the last two sessions. It gets to the House with no dissenting votes, gets killed with some... It's the one Georgia Lewis doesn't like, that allows city attorneys to try state cases in city court, traffic cases.
Well, with the state box checked.
Yes, that's all they do. That's the only difference. City officer checks the state box. That they don't have to pass all the new laws
all
every 2 years.
Yes,
new ordinance. And George didn't like it because that was a backdoor approach to the breathalyzer. It would allow the breathalyzer in Portland Municipal Court, which we took care of anyway.
And
That only gave us about 2,000 or 3,000 cases we needed.
I also gave him a budget factor to talk about too.
Well, he gave us 2-3 deputies, I think.
Well,
in favor of going along with the chairman's idea, as long as we can be assured of this being, and your idea is we can be assured it's going to the county treasurer, just make a general statement to that effect and delete R10, someone's 12 and 13.
Well, I'll take that in the form of motion that time, if I may, and the motion is to delete 10.
Well, won't 10 do that? Can't you just exclude the last sentence of 10, or the last, put a period after treasury? Wouldn't that do it, Tom?
Well, why do you need it at all? That's my point.
Yeah, well,
Well,
Tom said that it doesn't do that now. That the general fine would be divided if it...
No, but what I mean...
Well...
Well, I think any county one goes to the county, I think.
Well, here's what it says. Now, 156.650 says, now this is in district court, except as otherwise provided in ORS 484.250, but notwithstanding any other provision of law, one half of all fines and forfeited bail collected by the clerk of a district court in criminal cases shall be paid to the state treasurer.
Yeah, that's what.
Who shall place the money to the credit of the general fund available for general government expenses, and the other half of such fines and forfeit bail shall be paid to the county treasurer, who shall place the money to the credit of the general fund of the county.
That's what I thought, that there was a split at the district court level.
How about circuit?
That's district court.
And you're right about cities the same way. It's all split if the DA has to come in and try the case.
That's right.
But if it's a city ordinance, it stays with the city.
Cross-reference they have is County Financial Administration, Chapter 294, Dispositions of Fines Imposed on Auctioneers, State Budgets. You'd think you'd have a similar statute for Circuit Court, and I sure don't see any.
I don't recall ever seeing one, Doc. There might very well be one.
Why don't you check 30450.
Forfeitures not specially granted or otherwise appropriated by law, when recovered, shall be paid into the treasury of the proper county.
Okay, so if we left it alone and if it were tried in district court, it would go halvesies. If tried in the circuit court, we go fully to the county.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. So I think it ought to be county, period.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from that.
This year or any year.
It'd be the good Carson property tax relief plan.
let's give it to the county. Especially Marion.
Carson says, give all that gambling stuff to the county.
Well, righteous fines.
Well, now you know where we want to go. How are we going to get there? Do you think it's necessary? We haven't heard from Hood River Wasco, Wheeler and Sherman and Gillum and all the rest of them.
You know, I don't like 13 so much because that way you could have the offense occur. Well, maybe so. I guess that'd be fair, wouldn't it? Have the offense occur in Multnomah County, get a change of venue to Marion, and Marion County get the money, but they put up with the expense of trying the case.
Sure.
I guess they should, shouldn't they?
Well, of course you
might be a little slow to grant a change of venue in a proper case.
Well, you've got a problem, though, with Multnomah County prosecutors coming down trying the case. Multnomah County's putting out all that expense.
That's point two. Do you want to hear from all those counties now?
Yeah, I'd like to hear from all those counties.
I think this would be a good time to say, I know you believe, you think you understand what I said, but I'm not sure that you realize that what you heard is not what I meant.
Well, that helps. Yeah, all right.
I thought Senator Dirksen had passed away.
Well, I think that I'm sure I understood from what Ken said that he agreed to that.
That's true. That's true.
We just knew what we meant.
Yeah, we just knew what we meant.
You want it all to go to the county?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, man. To their general fund.
I move that we delete both sections with the resolution to draw one section allowing all of these fines accruing to be distributed to the county treasury, period.
Okay. This would contemplate maybe a general statute, not just for the gambling, but at the end of all our criminal code, right?
Well, boy, you know.
Unless otherwise specified.
Yeah, I'd like to know what we're talking about before we...
Unless otherwise specified.
Big business here. I mean, in the overall picture.
Yeah, the overall picture might be...
But as far as this is concerned, I would assume...
As far as the gambling.
Well, what I'm trying to... Well, I think that's fine. I just worry whether Don wants to put this in the gambling statute or puts it in the general statute.
It really ought to go in our procedural codes where this kind of stuff should be, I think, rather than in our substantive code, but
right.
Since it was part of the substantive law of gambling, I left it there, but
whether we move it and not do anything is going to create some, the counties are going to say, hey, you're taking, we used to get all that, now you're going to take half of it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And,
well, it might be a good idea. We could always put it in here now, then when we get to our procedural code, we can always move it over if you want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Any further comment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment?
No.
Deleting section 10.
No.
And R13, year 12.
Mm-hmm.
And directing the staff to prepare a general recovery of gambling fines statute, which would put the money in the county where the case is tried. Is that what we decided to
do? That's okay. That's fair. Whatever. Whatever's fair.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried.
No.
You said yours was an aye.
My aye.
Ah, right.
Aye. That was my motion.
What do you want to do about this jurisdictional thing in there about justice
that's
court?
All right.
Well, what does that do?
Oh, it just means that crime in either court.
You find throughout the statutes, Arl, that there are some misdemeanors which you can't try in justice courts that you can try in district courts. And I tried at one time to go through ORS and determine what crimes are triable in each court, and after 2 weeks gave up.
If we just don't do anything with it, would that mean that the justice court would not have jurisdiction in those cases?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Well, I think the chairman has a motion.
I don't think any motion is necessary.
Okay.
I think, right?
Until it goes to the full committee, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Then we'll have the chairman.
Yes, the Haas Carson thing that we were not able to get done in judiciary in 69, we may get done in criminal law admission in 71. My little bits and pieces, Harold. Okay, well, unless I hear further, we'll just assume that the director is being strangely silent.
Well, I'm not being strangely silent. I think that thing about justice court ought to come out of there myself. But
it did it not?
Well, I think the effect of the motion would be that. By omission.
Yeah. Okay, so held.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, section 11. Yeah. It's our section 11. I don't know what it's yours, but it's your section 11. By George, it is.
That's seizure and destruction of slot machines. And this language is from 167.540.
Is that really necessary?
Well,
that's the big axe through the thing from the front page of the Oregonian. Why don't we just save those pictures and let them rent those?
Well, what do you do with them? No one can legally possess them. There has to be provisions for their destruction.
Well, of course, wouldn't that be true? How about roulette wheels? What do you do with roulette wheels when you get those?
Right, roulette wheels are in every game store in the state.
That's true. It's only the slot machine that, by its very nature, regardless of its use, is the one that's bad, isn't it? It's how you use a roulette wheel.
I think we ought to send somebody down to J.K. Gill and destroy with an axe, destroy all those roulette wheels.
Well, this statute so far only runs to slot machines.
Apparently. Yeah, right. Well, I don't have any.
This does not require the sheriff to obtain a court order of destruction. Isn't that presently provided for?
No. The court, under sub 2, the court shall adjudge forfeiture and order the sheriff to destroy the device.
He can just seize them.
He seizes them under sub 1.
Shall seize and hold it subject to the court having jurisdiction. And the court shall order, then there's a proper protection there then.
Yeah. Now, there's some language in there. Here again, it's a question of the fund.
This one goes to the...
Now, it says the general fund in the present statute. Now, I take it that means the general fund of the county.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about the county treasurer.
That's not specific, though, is it?
And here you've made it specific, though.
No, it says this. No, the president.
They're from the county treasurer.
Who shall deposit them?
Yeah,
the general fund.
This is identical.
The county.
Why don't we put county in there? Yeah.
Of the county or county general fund?
Either way.
Which way do you?
I think that's
stick away, because that's where you're going to write the new 10. That's presumed.
Well, you're a little redundant, but I think to make it explicit, it's better to say to the general fund of the county.
Okay.
Of the county.
Mr. O'Dell so moves. All those in favor of the amendment to delete, that'd be a little G, a little F, so
yeah.
To the general fund and inserting before the period of the county.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried.
There's a...
Move the adoption section one.
There's a problem I'd like to bring up before we get to adopt it. There are many instances where these machines are seized and subsequently ordered destroyed by the court, where the electrical components are expensive, they're useful in other fields, they've been donated to or given to high school electronics classes and things of this sort. I believe that could still be done under this, and the sheriff could still sign an order of destruction because he's taken the machine apart. Do you see any problem with that? I'd hate to see that practice stop because we've...
Yeah, those make good computer.
They make very good components for other things.
Yes.
Right.
I think we can try and...
Well, destroy doesn't necessarily mean busted up.
It means destroy it as a gambling mechanism.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So if you removed its component parts and shipped them here and on for other purposes, it would still be tantamount to destruction. At least maybe the history can indicate that.
Just leave that up to the discretion of the sheriff.
I think I'd kind of hate to state it as part of the history from the standpoint that then, one way to look at it is we're giving it to the high school to build their own slot machine,
Yes,
you have to use a great deal of discretion where you're the sheriff.
And also, the sheriff will retain these presently under circumstances for the training of his vice squad in the operation of the machine. Things of this sort, so they can play like professionals and get on the inside of it. And so before they receive the destruction order, they'll hold off for a few weeks and train some of their boys on it and then get it. I'd hate to see that practice curtailed because it's useful.
Fine.
Okay, we have a motion to approve section 11. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk call the roll.
Senator Dernstein?
Aye.
Representative Hawes?
Aye.
Mr. O'Dell?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
12.
This is
your chance.
This is the O'Dell bill.
Where are we? Section 12, or the clerk, or the director's section 13.
Now, I have recast this in terms of a crime. Presently, the statute says any district attorney, sheriff, constable, city or town marshal, or police officer. I've just used district attorney or peace officer. Who refuses or willfully neglects to inform against and diligently prosecute all persons who they have reasonable cause to believe are guilty of a violation when they cite the gambling statute shall be punished upon conviction by a fine, not less, etc. So I've recast in terms of a crime called failing to enforce gambling laws. So it would be consistent with our form and style. And that's all I've done. It's basically the same thing we have now. There's a typographical under sub 2, shall declare the office, not officer, vacant.
Ours is correct. Well, now let me ask this. What does this... The prosecutor now, under our proposal, has the job of deciding whether or not the... Not the type of gambling, because we're not... That's all right. The book of playing. Whether or not it's social or professional. That's the choice. If he misguesses, then he's committed a crime, right? By I say, he says that's social, and so he decides that he was not going to prosecute. And somebody else thinks that it is.
Talks in terms of reasonable cause, though.
Reasonable cause is one thing. Probable cause may be something else, if you want to know. It bothers me because any district attorney in any county of this state
is
aware somehow or another that in his county certain forms of gambling taking place. He knows that. I think that it should be a stronger degree of intent somehow or another on the part of the district attorney. You say knowingly refuses and neglects. Yeah, I wonder. If there shouldn't be a stronger scienter or mens rea involved here. For example, I cite the Langley case as an example.
Of course, yeah. If they get into bribery or some of the other areas, we have them anyway, don't we?
Oh, yes.
Abuse of public office?
Oh, sure, yeah. That or if he's participating in crime and he needs to take him as a principal.
No, I think the district attorney. The bribery thing is always... you've got to have a person almost confess to a crime of attempting to bribe a public official in order to...
I mean, if he's promoting or profiting, you take him under the other sections, too.
The district attorney, by the virtue of his oath of office, is obliged to do this anyway, and failure to do so can hold him up either to removal by the voters or...
I tell you what I think we ought to do. I think we should send it along full committee, because they're going to have to decide on it. I don't think we should kick it out without bringing it up to them and have everyone talk about it, because it is a serious question, and it is a great exposure.
I agree with you, Harl. We ought to call a note to it. I just wonder if we have anywhere near a consensus in our own group here that we can reach a recommendation to the full committee.
Well, I would seriously recommend that there be a stronger degree of culpability involved in the wording of the statute.
For instance, what?
Well, here we just have knowingly refuses or neglects to inform against. Now, who's he going to inform?
Of course, this relates back to peace officer, too. You're
right, that's true. That's true, it does.
Diligently prosecute.
Diligently prosecute any person also relates to police officer. I don't like the way it's
written. Do you really think that... probable cause gives you any more than reasonable cause?
Well, there's been cases that have fiddled around with the definition between the two. I don't know that there is really a distinction.
Well, I don't think we need this section. I think we've got it covered under abuse of office.
I think
so. We've got it covered in the article under abuse of office. If you don't have it covered there, if you've got a real bad actor who's participating,
You've got him
as a principal to the crime,
right,
to the substantive crimes. And like Tom says, the district attorney is under oath to prosecute the laws, and if he can be turned out of office by the voters and that sort of thing. Of course, that's sometimes not too effective a remedy, I appreciate, but I think, I do think that we have the real culpable individual, either be he a district attorney or a law enforcement officer. I think we have him well covered under other sections, under our code, and I think abuse of office, and certainly if you've got bribery involved, you've got him there. You've certainly got him for accepting a bribe.
It just seems to
me... Compounding a felony, any number of things.
It just seems to me that there are adequate sanctions against the district attorney and the peace officer under what we have in existence now. And this is no more than another legislative warning, if you will, to follow your oath of office.
Right.
And it can be abused, and I think it has been abused in the past.
Well, you see it really in the Midwest. I grew up in the river there, and right across the river there in Illinois, in southern Illinois, and a whole basket full of nightclubs that have gambling, flourishing, every type of gambling you can think of, and it's always been historic there that it's who you support for sheriff and who the state, who's the head of the state police. And they periodically would shut down and contributions to political campaigns instantly materialize, and then they're wide open again. And it's continued that way all the time I lived there.
Crime, is it not under our business process?
Well, remember I said campaign contributions materialize.
Hmm. Well, now, for example, under abuse of office, official misconduct in the second degree, public servant, which would clearly include a DA or a law enforcement officer, but commits the crime of official misconduct in the second degree if he knowingly violates any statute or lawfully adopted rule or regulation relating to his office. And then his first degree, if it's with an intent to obtain a benefit for himself, he knowingly fails to perform a duty, or he knowingly performs an act constituting an unauthorized exercise of his official duties. He knowingly fails to perform a duty imposed upon him by law or one clearly inherent in the nature of his office. Of course, if you have a law, criminal law,
if you have gambling activity in your county, it's clearly inherent that you should investigate and prosecute. Failure to do so would be official misconduct.
Do you want to make that in a form of motion, Tom, of deleting Section 12?
I would so move on the grounds that is adequately covered under the rest of our rest of the code.
And okay. I could put something in the commentary to indicate why we haven't retained that.
I think it should also be brought up to.
To the full commission.
Yeah,
yeah, I think yeah. So. It's an important.
Well, I have no objection to going to full commission, but
yeah. I'm going to full with that.
Well, the only thing I'm trying to drive for, and I don't mean to force anybody to the flame, but I do think that I don't like it when the other subcommittees drop it on the table, then lean back in their chair and say, "Well, go ahead and do it." I think it's up to us to formulate it. And if they want to reverse this or change it,
that's
fine.
The committee.
That's
all right. I agree with that. I think that we should take a position on it. And
second the motion.
Okay, all those in favor of deleting Section 12 indicate, or by not adopting, as the case may be, I see you have in brackets, so I guess I'll say deleting. Section 12 indicate by saying aye, those opposed no, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Dernstein?
Aye.
Attorney
Haas?
Aye.
Mr. O'Dell?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Well, gentlemen, very nice. Wonderful work.
Place your bets, gentlemen. We're closing the table.
This will be the last article that you'll get under our subsidy code. The chairman will be participating as part of our ad hoc committee on grading and sentencing.
Yeah,
very soft way of telling you.
Head charge.
I might suggest.
This is the Criminal Law Revision Commission, Subcommittee Number 2, March 6, 1970, 2 p.m., Room 315, State Capitol Building. Today's subject, offenses against the family, preliminary draft number 1.
February 9th, I guess. Yeah. 12th meeting, February 9th.
Right.
Minutes are the last thing that's in your notebook.
Okay. Ken, do you second?
You bet.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Here. Since I wasn't here,
Carried.
I didn't know it took a second for the minutes.
I don't know what it does. We don't.
Nicely done. Well, you handled me very well.
Yeah.
We thought that, you know, this subcommittee would like this article. It kind of gets us back into the sex area again.
Oh, geez.
What are we on?
Offenses against the family. A little bit. There's a little bit of sex in here. Not much. A little incest.
Yeah, baby.
Okay, Roger, why don't you go
ahead?
Okay,
page 1, section 1, are three definitions. I'll just go over those briefly. We can come back when we discuss the later sections as to where they're used. Subsection 1 is alcoholic liquor. This definition is taken from ORS 471005.
Are you satisfied with it?
Well, the key part of the definition is on the volume. In other
That's
words,
what I said,
yeah.
There.
I'm no not expertise in this field, but
how about vanilla extract? Is that
well? They exclude that. In other words, it's not against the law to give or furnish vanilla extract to a minor in this state because of the regulatory code. So we discontinued it here.
Okay.
Subsection.
Why don't we enter the word by volume and give us pleasure?
Oh, gee. Oh.
Nice to have you back.
Subsection 2, descendant. That word is used in the incest statute. The significance to the definition is that we've included stepchildren and adopted children in our present criminal statute on incest does not cover stepchildren or adopted children. Subsection 3, support. And this is basically the same definition we use in our non-support statute now, except that we've added medical attention and education, although those two forms of support are, by case law, usually included within the definition of necessary support. So on page 3, section 2, bigamy. Person commits the crime of bigamy if he knowingly marries or purports to marry another person at a time when either is lawfully married. And subsection 2 gives two defenses. Subsection A, that the actor's spouse is voluntarily withdrawn or remained absent for 5 consecutive years. And the actor has no knowledge whether the absent spouse was living or dead within that period. And subsection 2, the actor otherwise reasonably believes he is legally eligible to marry. The language purports to marry is in there to negate the defense, which is sometimes raised to charge the bigamy that since the second marriage was invalid or void because he was already married, that it could not be charged with bigamy because there was in fact no second valid marriage. Subsection A on the defense, I have 5 years in brackets. Our present law is 7 years.
Why are you changing it?
How do you voluntarily? The actor's spouse. Oh, I see.
It's bugged out, in other words. And
in other words, the old man has blown for 5 years, but she hasn't gone through divorce.
Now, one of the codes, and I can't remember which one it is offhand, Roger, mentioned with respect to that, they didn't use the voluntarily withdrawn part of it because they felt that after a period of time, this may have been the model penal code.
I believe it is.
That after a period of time, it might be difficult to prove who had left whom, you know, and whether or not that's really material after 5 years or whatever number of years you have in there.
whether you need to establish that it was the other spouse that left or you left the other spouse, whether the important thing is knowledge on the part of the person, whether the other person is dead or not.
They just felt it would complicate things by having to litigate the fault of the separation.
Why do we have the defense?
You
don't have to have service for a divorce, do you?
No. Structure. By publication. I would be inclined to agree with what you're getting at. The only sympathy I have is, of course, for the woman whose husband just disappears. And she, you know, in Vietnam or someplace like that. And you don't want to go out and try, you know, you don't know whether you should get a divorce or whatever. But the tons of people whose husbands just disappear and sit around, I think their recourse is get a divorce, isn't it?
Well, we discussed this, and I think this defense probably, in some respects, perhaps has outlived its usefulness. Perhaps at a time when, because you had to retain an attorney to get a divorce, it wasn't possible for a lot of perhaps indigent women to get a divorce when they were deserted by their husband over a period of many years. Now that wouldn't seem to be a problem, at least in Oregon, with your legal aid. And as you say, constructive service, you don't have to know who the deserting spouse is or whether he's dead or alive.
Well, I mean, it just seems to me this is the kind of thing, because it could be a year, or it could be 6 months. Obviously, this kind of a situation is going to happen in the case of the indigent type person, and nobody's going to prosecute her anyway.
Well, yeah, and what the only thing it does, I suppose, is for the woman who has waited for 5 years for her husband to come back, or the husband has waited for the wife to come back for 5 years, he just says, well, in effect, you don't have to get a divorce.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Person. Whether you,
I'm ready to strike subsection A.
Okay.
What if you're a Catholic and don't believe in divorce?
Well, then you don't get one, or you assume the husband's dead.
No, you're not only committing a crime, what are you doing? Blasphemy?
Well, if you don't have that in there, you would have your statutory presumption
at 7 years.
At 7 years, which
I think the spouse could then petition the court and have him declared dead after 7 years.
Under that's one of the statutory presumptions now, that a person not heard from in 7 years is presumed dead. It's a rebuttable presumption, but you'd always have that to fall back on, I suppose, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm just hesitant to put in that he's voluntarily withdrawn, because it seemed to me that then the client comes in, the legal aid office or regular, and she says, I really don't have enough money. And I'll say, well, how long has she been gone? He's been gone 4.5 years. Well, good, wait 6 months, you can go out and get married again. And then the status of whose kids are what, and liens, and who has family responsibility, and if the husband then comes home, and I just...
Now, the model penal code allows that as a... Well, they don't frame it in terms of divorce. It's really an exception, unless at the time the actor and the prior spouse have been living apart for 5 consecutive years and no knowledge. I guess the New York law doesn't provide for it, does it? And,
well, when the model penal code commentary was published, which is in about 15 years ago, just about every state in the union provided for.
Well, this is a matter I think, because it just seems to me it's some old common law hangover or something.
Well, it is. That's what
and,
it is.
It just doesn't make sense, and it is a matter that really boils down to you're going to have to leave it to the discretion of the prosecutor. Well, he just isn't going to prosecute people.
Yeah, well, we thought about leaving it out in the first place. We talked about
it. And if there hasn't been a real withdrawal, you're going to be faced with this defense and having to fight that out.
Yeah. Well, we felt the subcommittee ought to take a look at it and decide what you want to do on it.
What happens to B when we pull A?
I had a real question. Why do you need B? Because he knowingly marries or purports to.
B's a little different situation.
Mistake of law or fact, and I think particularly as the mistake of law that it should be in the section when you rely on you presume to be a valid divorce, for example.
What does the word otherwise, what? In other words, now we'll read, in any prosecution of this section, it is a defense that it...
You take out the otherwise, is what you'd have to do.
All right, I'll add the word otherwise to my motion.
And delete B.
And delete the B and the A and put it into one paragraph.
Right.
And the semicolon, and the colon. With me, Ken? I mean,
you bet.
See what we're doing?
Okay. Yes.
Any further discussion on Lee's motion to delete the semicolon on third line of paragraph 2, delete all of paragraph A, and delete, including the semicolon and the or, delete B in parens, lowercase d, delete otherwise, so it reads as that. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Carried.
You're a little fast on those motions.
That learned something in my 2 seconds. You don't wait around. People change their mind. If you think I'm going to bring that back up again for a vote, you're wrong.
Let's see. Have we approved the section?
Let's just go on through.
Section 3 on page 11, incest. Crime of incest is committed if actor marries or engages in sexual intercourse or deviant sexual intercourse with a person whom he knows to be related to him, either legitimately or illegitimately, as an ancestor, descendant, or brother or sister of either the whole or half blood.
That's almost the same statute, isn't it?
Well, no, we've made some changes now.
Because of your definitions.
Descendant, we've included stepchildren and adopted children, which isn't presently law, and we have cut out some people because our present law refers to those that are prohibited from marriage. And so this statute does not include nieces and nephews, uncles and aunts, and first cousins would no longer be covered by incest. But under our present law, they are. In other words, we're bringing in one group and cutting out another group.
Would you like to, in 25 words or less, explain the subjective theories that go behind it?
What is the social policy?
Yes, what is the social policy that allows the aunts to qualify?
The reason that I felt stepchildren and adopted children should be brought in is because most of the commentators feel now that the real basis for penal laws covering incest or the protection of the family unit. I mean, there's some question now whether the genetic basis for incest has any real basis in fact.
But that's undecided. Open to debate. There may be some.
But it seems to me that if you're talking about protection of the family unit, incest serving that function, that stepchildren and adopted children should be included.
Well, yes, except assuming there, for instance, let's suppose that the stepfather is 52 and the stepdaughter's 45. Then, of course, then all you are arguing is holding the family together or something like that. My point is that...
I suppose she's 25.
Well, this is a very frequent occurrence. They call it the bad back syndrome here in this county, where the fathers who don't work have bad backs and have found their stepdaughters, who are the daughters of the new wife, are very attractive. And there is a total string of convictions in Marion County. There's one yet to be acquitted by a jury, contributing to the lengthy of the juvenile is the catch-all that they were going under. Which now they would come under incest, perhaps, if we change this. My point is, aren't we really, you're not, by the time you charge incest, you really aren't talking about holding the family together.
I was speaking more of it in terms of a deterrent.
Yeah. And usually, when you get into an incestual situation, you're talking about a child who is beyond the age of where it would be rape or contributing to. I mean, if incest may involve an older, where you've got someone who is capable legally of giving consent, but because of the relationship, the law has prohibited this kind of thing. I think you've still got that consideration to think about, too, whether, but...
Why did we take out, then, Roger, we took out aunts and uncles and first cousins because of, if you once make the determination, if you do it on the family, and then aunts and uncles generally are not members of the family, is that right?
Well, that's what I believe. Of course, the model penal code left it open. They put it in brackets whether you wanted to do that. Some states have and some haven't.
Let's keep it narrow.
I mean, it's still prohibited from marriage in the state. They couldn't marry, but all we would be doing is saying it would not be a crime of incest for them to engage in sexual intercourse. They could marry, but it'd be avoid marriage. And we're talking about concerning adults, because if there's a minor involved, it ordinarily would be prosecutable under one of the sexual offenses.
And you say the stepchildren come under here?
They do, because of the definition of descendant. Now, the stepchild would not be included once the spouse, for example, the party that you gained the affinity through, was deceased. In other words, if you married a woman with
But a stepchild children, is not technically a descendant.
No,
our word of descendant. Yeah. Would the guy in the street, if he is going to use this as a deterrent, presumably somebody to inform him that you don't do that, would he be wise enough to know that the daughter of the gal he married becomes a descendant, at least for sex crimes purposes?
Well, perhaps not, but as far as our present penal law on incest is concerned, probably many people, laymen in Oregon, don't know just what degrees of consanguinity are prohibited and what aren't. You don't find it in the incest statute. You have to look over in ORS 106 to find out what marriages avoid in Oregon. Most people are aware of that I know.
Are there many prosecutions for incest?
Very few.
Not very.
But
no,
there have been 3 or 4 reported cases in Oregon, usually involving daughters.
Yeah, it's usually going after, usually going for contributing instead of incest.
Yeah, right, and that's
well,
what I meant.
We get them under our sex offense.
Because there,
no,
if
under those sex offenders statutes that you proposed,
you can get them if they fall within our age limitations that we have in our sex draft.
I agree.
I move its adoption, Mr. Chairman. I think that. It's an expression of our culture.
Careful, we got that back in the face last time.
But I think it is an important question to decide on this issue of the stepkids. I mean, because that's...
Well, I'm inclined to go along with Roger's feeling that the purpose of this is to protect the family.
Yeah.
Because I'm not so taken by the genetic argument. Although I understand it's still pretty well established.
The other problem under this statute, and we haven't provided a corroboration requirement, but the case law usually holds the party who is involved in, for example, sexual intercourse with the defendant is an accomplice. And so that he cannot be convicted on his testimony alone. We haven't included that, but it would be applied that way in that prosecution. Some states have put it in their statute.
I sure hope so, because that's one of the most abused parts of our, if I may coin a phrase, of our formerly contributing statute. That is, a little 16-year-old hustles in and says that daddy's been naughty to me. And bad news for daddy, unless he wears a white shirt and a tie and has a professional job. No jury believe me. Solid moron.
The case law holds generally that if they're of the age of consent, they're accomplice. If they're under the age of consent, they're not an accomplice. They're a victim, and therefore do not have to be corroborated, which in Oregon would be under 16.
Must require corroboration. That'll do away with this statute.
I don't know. The mamas are the ones that usually blow the whistle on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
they've been jilted.
Yeah, of course, you sometimes, too, and I personally have a couple of cases involving kids where mama didn't want to corroborate. And, you know, where you felt you had a legitimate case and you had an abusive situation that had been going on for a number of years, maybe with two or three kids, and finally one of the kids just decides, well, this is enough, and, you know, leaves home or reports it to a neighbor or the police or something. And anyway, you eventually get word of it. And it's sometimes very difficult to know what to do, you know. I mean, you can put the kid on a polygraph or something like that and try to establish foundation for the charge and whatnot, but oftentimes, particularly in some of your lower economic groups, the mother is very reluctant, particularly if she has a number of children. She's reluctant to testify against the father, although she can. She's reluctant to do it because it's going to mean the loss of support for the family. And so you're really in a dilemma. And of course, I'm not sure that this would, you know, whatever we write.